Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast AFC Edition. I'm your host, Ian Hardison, joining me on this lovely Wednesday afternoon. PFF's finest data analysts out there, the man that usually pisses off at least one fan base every single week by telling them what they're expected to do, PFF's finest, Kevin Cole. Kevin, what's up, man?
Yeah, I'm trying to think out who I'm making upset this week. Maybe I want to go back to the Giants because I had them being only barely better, and they're starting to get into their 5-1 start. But let me tell you, Giants fans, you have an opportunity of a lifetime. Jets fans also, to a degree, so both New York fan bases. The Giants are pretty significant underdogs at the Jacksonville Jaguars, 3-point underdogs this week. So, hey, the market doesn't believe in you also. So don't take it out on us. Take it out on the sports books. Make some of that money and then laugh all the way to the bank as you prove everyone else wrong who is biased against your team.
I thought it was going to be the Chiefs. Weren't you? Didn't you have some sick truce to tell them about that Juju Smith-Schuster, you know,
big yeah, I'm like, what's wrong with these people? Seriously, what is wrong with me? Like, people, all I'm doing is I'm saying, if you're saying Juju has some regression coming, and I agree, he has some regression coming, but catching a target that's 5 yards downfield in the flat and breaking multiple tackles, zero tackles broken so far this season until that play, by the way, breaking like three tackles and taking it in for a score. It's not exactly like, yes, that's what we've been waiting for this season. It's like, no, you've been waiting for get in the red zone and get an end zone target. Is it too much to ask for an end zone target? But God, it's shocking to me how upset people are, just primed to be upset. So, you know, I'll let it wash over me though. I'll do that.
It was kind of peak Juju to finally get him this big day. He has two chunk gains, and it almost was like the worst he's maybe looked this year in terms of like overall explosiveness and ability to break some tackles. But to your point, he wasn't really doing it in weeks 1-5 either. Anyway, we'll talk about the Chiefs more in a bit. You know, continuing the tradition of starting off the AFC pod with an NFC team and then something else random. Let's get back on schedule, starting off with the AFC East. Buffalo Bills have earned their bye week. They're sitting at 5-1, which takes us to the second place New York Jets, Kevin. Not the only team in New York, you know, doing some big things this year. And they have won 3 straight with Zach Wilson under center. Now, hasn't had to do all that much. 36-21, most recently 18 pass attempts. Is this going to work out, Kevin? Because you look at the first 3 weeks of the year with Joe Flacco under center, second in pass play rate, last 3 weeks, 26th. Win is a win is a win, but at some point it sure seems like Zach Wilson, these receivers are going to have to carry their weight.
Yeah, it all depends on what you are talking about. When you're talking about, is it going to work out? Is it going to work out for Jets wide receivers or tight ends that you have on your fantasy team? Not looking so hot right now. Now, the Jets as a team, you're not going to have the ceiling with Zach Wilson playing this way. I mean, we were touting him saying highest PFF grade of his career 2 weeks ago. Last week, lowest PFF grade of his career. So the up and down nature that we're talking about here, we're seeing it from Wilson, we're seeing it from Lawrence, we're seeing it from these other guys. It just doesn't look like we're going to get the next superstar elite quarterback out of this class. But the defense has been good. The defense has been legit. Maybe it's all the Packers just falling apart, but it's been multiple weeks now where they've been able to be pretty good on that side of the ball and pretty good running the ball. You have those two elements. You don't need a ton out of quarterback play. So from a team level, I think they look good. I mean, they probably have a lot more hope now in a way to make a potential playoff, get into the playoff type of push than even the Giants right now, I think, all together. So it all depends on your perspective and what you're aiming for.
we have seen at least some flashes of Zach being good. It hasn't just been him terrible the entire time. He is averaging, you know, a plenty respectable 10.1 yards per attempt when kept clean. The problem is 2.1 yards per attempt under pressure. That is the single biggest drop off of any quarterback in the NFL when kept clean versus under pressure. So you still see the flashes of him getting out of the pocket and just kind of taking risks downfield that other guys wouldn't. I mean, he had this throw in the end zone last week that was so incredibly irresponsible, probably should have been picked off, but just the fact he threw it instead of just tossing it into the stands, like, again, that's why I appreciate the Zach Wilson experience for better and often usually for worse.
Well, when he had that Corey Davis pass down the sideline, he throws with style at the expense of results, unfortunately, because it looked cool coming out of his hand. He's kind of like flinging it as he's running. But then Corey Davis had to slow down, come inside a bit, catch it, and you know, eliminated all yak opportunities. But I'm for it. I think I'm for it. I'm all about style over substance when it comes to a lot of these teams. So let's keep on doing it, Zach.
And life in general, I think some could argue. So. But yes, Corey Davis.
Not if you see my wardrobe, though. If you saw my wardrobe, you would not agree.
Speaking of Corey Davis, the Jets' leading receiver still through 6 weeks at 351 yards on that aforementioned deep pass, had a silky smooth double move. It's just one of those things where I think Corey Davis could have like 500 yards more than the next closest Jets receiver, and we'd probably still rank him third on his own team. But to Kevin's initial point, yes, very difficult to get behind any of these guys at this point. Elijah Moore, zero targets last week. Garrett Wilson, unfortunately, still losing plenty of opportunities to both of them and Braxton Berrios. And lest we forget, Jeff Smith has to get a few snaps each and every week as well. So this week in Denver, Broncos favored by 1.5 points, game total at 39.5. Look, Kevin, if we have Breece Hall, we're starting him. If not, we're not starting any of these guys.
It's something else. That's pretty much it. I mean, Hall has been really, really good. He's had opportunity, though, as his like expected fantasy points have also been really, really good. So it's not just a fluke. Although, you know, if they get into some game scripts, things turn sideways. You never know how much time Michael Carter will be out there, since proportionally he's getting more routes still than Breece Hall. But for now, you're starting them every week and you're pretty happy with what you've seen so far.
Only three running backs this year, top 24 finishes in each and every week. Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, and Breece Hall. Rookie has been nothing short of fantastic so far. In third place, we have the 3-3 Patriots. Quarterback competition in the air, Kevin. Bailey Zappe versus Mac Jones. Hey, even if it's one of these things where we're just like, all right, no, it's Mac Jones' team. Hats off to Bailey Zappe for the job he's done over these past 3 weeks. 24, 29, and 38 points for a Patriots offense that was starting to catch their stride a little bit against the Ravens before Mac Jones got hurt. But before that, man, it really was quite the fall off from last year's reigning six-rank scoring offense. But just with Zappe, I do love sometimes, Kevin, when we can paint the picture using analytics of what we're actually seeing out there on the film. And I think we can do that pretty easily with him because he's making all the easy throws, and that's really it. He does not have a single big-time throw this season. He's got the second lowest turnover-worthy play rate. He's got the number one quarterback rating, eighth highest PFF passing grade, number three in yards per attempt. He's the second most accurate quarterback. How long can this keep up, though? Because, hey, if Zappe's just going to consistently make the right decision every single play, who gives a shit about your style points? You know, we just talked about preferring Zach Wilson's style over substance, but for the goal of winning football games, I understand why NFL teams might prefer someone like Bailey Zappe. So how sustainable is this style of play, Kevin? And are you actually entertaining the Bailey Zappe versus Mac Jones debate?
I'm not. I do think it's funny that we were subjected to 5 billion congratulatory tweets, people patting themselves on the back about the fact that Cooper Rush, there was no quarterback controversy between Cooper Rush and Dak Prescott. And those same people a day later will be like, Bailey Zappe, maybe we got a quarterback controversy going on here. So no, I don't see it. Fourth round rookie has been fine. Last week, he at least threw the ball a lot. I thought it was impressive what he did on these kind of like middle down and distance sort of situations, moving the chains, things like that. He also had, you know, Hunter Henry just running completely wide open. He also had Jonnu Smith catching a pass, breaking a couple tackles and running after the catch for another 30, 40 yards. He also had Ramondre Stevenson scoring a 31 yard touchdown on 3rd and 10. That, you know, the defense was not exactly making him work for it a lot there. The Browns defense was doing the Browns defense sort of thing a little bit more, but he definitely seems like he's functional. If anything, I think he's playing himself into maybe a very lucrative, like Chase Daniel type of career trajectory. And when you can get that sort of bag, that's a very high outcome for a fourth round draft pick.
Okay, I didn't actually click on the story, but Shefty retweeted it. Chase Daniel has a second job still. This dude has run the hottest of any maybe professional athlete ever, and he feels the need to work a second job while he's still employed in the NFL. Well, what the hell, man? Dude won the jackpot, and he's still showing up for, like, extra work. I hate that mindset. Come on, man. Like, what are we even doing here on the planet if you can't make $40 million and do nothing while doing it and then not enjoy it the rest of your life? Couldn't be me, Kevin. Moving on, though, to Monday Night Football. The Patriots are home against the Bears, favored by 8 points. Game total at a lowly 39.5. NFL just spoiling us with all these, primetime shootouts lately. In New England, look, Ramondre Stevenson, the running back. Y'all, you actually had a nice chart, Kevin, showing that he had the most valuable workload in week six. He did get the two touchdowns. Honestly, could have had a third. Got stuffed twice there at the goal line. So, yes, Ramondre Stevenson, get him in there. Hey, just because Ramondre Stevenson is really good and doing his thing, we don't have to completely shit on Damian Harris. One cool stat I found this week, I like looking at the percentage of carries that a running back has at least 2 yards after contact. I think that's a better way of kind of presenting that statistic versus, you know, hey, guy breaks an arm tackle on a line of scrimmage and picks up 80 yards after contact. Damian Harris, the only running back in the NFL with over 80% of his carries this year, including at least 2 yards after contact. Only running back under 50%, James Robinson. We'll talk more about him in a bit. But once Damon Harris is back, okay, we'll start discussing, you know, what that split looks like. As long as he's out, though, keep Stevenson in there. I think the only other guy worth talking about in this offense, Kevin, that we can really trust, Hunter Henry, okay, still working pretty much full-time, but Jonnu is back on the up and up. It's what to make of rookie wide receiver Tyquan Thornton. Now, last week, Jacoby Myers, Devontae Parker, still the clear-cut top two guys in this offense. We're hearing some trade murmurs about Kendrick Bourne. He's a little bit banged up in his own right. But to be fair, Thornton, guy that got a lot of hype in training camp, he's made the most out of his opportunities so far. Is he someone that you actually think we could be feeling good about throwing in the flex spot moving forward, or one big game in an offense that should still be run heavy more weeks than not? Probably not a guy to get overly hyped up about.
Yeah, I don't think we get overly hyped up about him. I mean, he is a role type of guy, right? He looks like he weighs about 175 soaking wet with weights in his shoes, and he runs a 4.2. So that's good. It's good in certain circumstances. I think he has been able to function outside of that field stretching role. But then we saw last week, he got a little fantasy goodness on a rushing play, and that's going to happen sometimes. It's not going to happen a lot. I just think there are too many functional but not elite options on this offense, and he's another one to add to the mix. I just don't see him being really like a target hog type of situation that's going to differentiate himself when there may not be the total passing volume there.
Dolphins last place at the moment, but they are getting Tua back, sitting at 3-3. And it's just amazing to me, Kevin, how our guy Skylar Thompson under center, unfortunately, he got injured. He was moving the offense. Really, I mean, that dude, the throw over the middle of Jalen Waddle, like I had to rewatch that thing 3 or 4 times. You know, I had to put the blinds down, make sure no one was watching me over there in the kitchen.
Unfortunately, the offensive line was moving the offense backwards the entire time. So that wasn't
that drive where they had like 4 penalties, one after another. It was like 3rd and 30. And they're still picking up chunk gains because, you know, only God can stop Skylar Thompson, I guess. But hey, Teddy Bridgewater comes in. He starts playing well, you know, starts showing why he's, you know, covering pretty much every game he gets into these days. And of course, Tua was impressing before the injury. You add it all together in this offense, despite only having really 3.5 games of Tua, number 10 in EPA per pass play, 2nd in yards per attempt, 11th in explosive pass play rate, and 8th in overall team QB rating. So how much of this, Kevin, as much as I would love to sit here and just talk Skylar Thompson for an hour, and if you want to do that, that's okay. But how much of Teddy and Skylar keeping this offense moving has kind of changed your mind potentially about Tua's hot start in the season, if it has at all?
I don't think it's changed my mind that much. Again, my thesis coming into the year was Alex Smith, 2017 was what we were going to hope for. I think that was basically what we were getting, maybe even a little bit on steroids those first couple of seasons. So I was happy to see that. And I think that's what's going to continue. I mean, he's going to regress some. I look at all the different quarterback metrics as far as the different situational stuff for how they're playing. And the one thing that sticks out for Tua was outperformance on 3rd and 4th down. So that's not going to necessarily continue. I don't think it's like Carson Wentz talk about 2017. He was the guy in 2017 who had this massive outperformance in late downs, which never really reappeared in his career. But I think with those options, a very narrow passing game, they're really just throwing it to these guys in volume. That will continue. You're always going to get potentially big plays. Now it's time for Skylar Thompson talking. I got my notes here. 85.6 grade for Skylar Thompson. Okay. If we count the penalty throws, 9.4 yards per attempt, 10 out of 16 for 150 yards, plus two drops, which would have led to at least another 15, 20, perhaps even more yards there. So, yeah, when he comes back, maybe we don't immediately bench Tua, but, you know, wait a couple weeks, and then we can move him immediately back into the starting lineup, I feel like.
I just love the way this dude's been playing all preseason into the regular season. You know, we didn't want to be too hard on him for having to come off the bench. You know, the previous week when Teddy gets sacked on the first play, just one of the biggest what ifs, I think, of 2022, you know, football and real life. What would have happened if Skylar just hadn't gotten that right thumb injury? We may never know. This Sunday night, it's going to be Dolphins at home against the Steelers. Dolphins favored by 7 points against either Trubisky or Kenny Pickett. Game total at just 44.5. So, we got Tyreek Hill. My God, man. I was looking at those next-gen, you know, route tree things with Tyreek in his four biggest games this year. Just the way they use him, like, you know, any offense, if you can't figure out how to get your ball to the number one wide receiver on your team, go look at how Mike McDaniel was using Tyreek Hill. And I think Tyreek Hill even said after the game, like, to a reporter that if that dude was throwing him the ball, he'd still be able to put up some numbers. I don't disagree at this point. So we got Tyreek. We got Waddle. I mean, I'm not going to really rely on Mike Gesicki necessarily going out there, scoring two touchdowns every week. With that said, I appreciate it because watching him do the gritty is the only thing that brings me joy these days. In the backfield, though, Kevin, we have Raheem Mostert. He's the lead back, but it just hasn't been like his snap rates, his kind of volume of the backfield. We've seen guys with similar usage in other backfields have far more fantasy production. And to this point, Mostert, just the RB39 expected PPR points per game. Okay, you take away the first two games and really look at him being cemented, he's still just 25th. So as much as I see the backfield going to Raheem Mostert, is he someone that you really find yourself like actively trying to start? Because over these past couple of weeks, man, I look at the Dolphins offense, and if I get a close start sit decision with Mostert, usually taking the other guy, because again, I think the two guarantees in Miami are Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Maybe we'll get a Mostert week here and there. Maybe we'll get a Gesicki week here and there. I'm just not confident in really any running back on this roster being this consistent high-end fantasy piece.
Yeah, I mean, he was basically splitting routes with Chase Edmond, who's kind of getting back into the picture. And, you know, this offense, I know that it's the – you know, the tree of Shanahan running the ball, this and that. But still, even with Skylar Thompson, even with Teddy Bridgewater, it doesn't matter who it's really been this season. They like to throw it around. They like to throw it around the yard a little bit. So if you're not going to get hyper efficiency from someone like Raheem Mostert, which you can get sometimes, but if you're not going to get that, we're still talking about a team now that's in the top 10 in pass rate over expectation. That's with significant time being played by Teddy Bridgewater and a seventh round rookie quarterback. They're still slinging it then. That just means there's going to be a lower ceiling to what we're going to see for Mostert.
First place in the AFC North, we got the Baltimore Ravens sitting at just 3-3, though. Man, Lamar Jackson fever weeks 1 through 3. Dude had 12 total touchdowns. You know, I was, you know, throwing out the MVP stuff. Everyone was hyped. Only 3 total scores over the last 3 weeks. 20, 19, and 20 real life points against the Bills, Giants, and Bengals. So, hey, 3 good teams. You know, close losses there with a narrow win. I'm not saying it's time to completely panic or anything as an organization. But is this something, Kevin, we should be paying more attention to with Lamar? Because, hey, it's 3 weeks of him looking like the freaking overall fantasy QB1 world beater. Lamar 2019 is back, baby. Last 3 weeks looked a lot more like kind of what we saw in 2020, 2021. A lot of missed opportunities on the table. I mean, Duvernay probably could have had 3 touchdowns the last 2 weeks with some better balls. Andrews had one sale. We even had, I think, Powell or whoever the hell that was 2 weeks ago miss a wide open one. So a couple passes away, you know, from those point totals certainly being in the upper 20s. But what have you seen, if anything, that's been different about Lamar over these past 3 weeks? Could it just be an issue of Rashad Bateman not being out there? Or is it a bigger problem with maybe defenses figuring out the scheme?
No, I don't think it's a. I'd never really go with the figure out the scheme sort of situation when you've had a successful quarterback for this long a period of time. So I don't think that's it. I think he had some unsustainable production those first couple of weeks, in particular the long runs and some of the long passes, especially the run after catch by Bateman in one of the games there. So that's been gone. It hurts that Bateman's not there, but I like, internals underneath how he's been playing this season. And he's still rushing the ball. He's still getting production in multiple ways. Mark Andrews, that connection is obviously still there. So I think it's fine going forward. I think it's just where he stands, who he's going to be this season. He's not going to be QB1. Okay. We can crown Josh Allen, I think. I think already on that. But he's not going to be outside of the top three, I don't think either. He's going to regress back up from what we've seen the last couple of weeks. And that's just who he's going to be. Don't expect high end passing numbers and high end rushing numbers like we saw in week one every week, but expect good production from him.
Maybe not the overall QB1 on the year. He is the overall QB1 in week seven with Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts on bye. So he does have
That's
that
for sure.
going for him. This week, first Cleveland at home. Ravens sitting at 6.5 point favorites. Game total at 45.5. So mentioned Duvernay. It's just behind Mark Andrews is always going to be tough for these guys in the offense. So if Rashad Bateman stays out, I do think Duvernay is still someone that's tough to, rank much outside your top 40, if at all. Still, though, we just got to realize it's going to be a little bit sporadic. The other question here is what to make of this backfield. So J.K. Dobbins got taken out early last week. Harbaugh was saying it was not a knee injury, Kevin. It's just sore. So there's a big difference there, apparently. So we shouldn't be.
I heard different descriptions. I heard locked up. That doesn't sound good. That does not sound good.
None of it sounds good. And even before we got these post-game, I don't want to say excuses. The guy's knee locked up or whatever the hell happened to it. Even before that, last week, Drake outsnapped J.K. Dobbins in a week where we weren't getting those, notes after the game. So, man, J.K. Dobbins, I was still trying to treat him as this low-end borderline RB2. This week, man, I got him and Drake basically hovering in that mid-tier RB3 range. Basically, the point that I put, guys, if I don't want to start them unless I really have to. We still have Justice Hill out of the picture with the hamstring injury. For the time being, Gus Edwards' return from the PUP list does seem to be coming sooner rather than later. Just no to starting this backfield, because as awesome as Drake was this last week, not exactly the sort of performance that we can hang our hat on expecting more of that moving forward.
Yeah, I don't think so. Although I'm probably a little bit more concerned about Dobbins and maybe his ability to even play this week. We'll see. I mean, we'll see what ends up happening here. But, I guess we're in bye weeks, right? We're in bye weeks. So if you have Kenyon Drake, and you need someone to play. I mean, I would play Drake before above Dobbins this week for sure. We'll get more injury information as we hear for the rest of the season. I don't see any reason for him not to control that backfield. And what I think was what was funny is earlier this year when I was talking about the Ravens having trouble running the ball with their running backs, I was assured by lots of people telling me, but once J.K. Dobbins is there, that's the whole problem. Kenyon Drake's a problem. Now, Kenyon Drake is busting off, 50-yard runs or 40-yard runs on these different plays. So, again, guys, running backs, let's face it, they're all good. They can all run pretty well. I guess the question for Dobbins now, you have to be a little bit concerned about his long term, because he was someone, dunking on Rappaport, dunking on anyone who would get into his zone about how he was going to come back, and then he didn't come back. So if you're going to take that as an indication, it sounds like a player who may be pushing himself too early, too quick to come back, might not have been ready, might want bitten off a little bit more than he can chew. So in that circumstance, I would say take your time and get healthy and not make this another season ending type of situation.
The whole thing was weird with him getting active. He was practicing in full all week, and then he still wasn't playing, being listed as questionable. And just when you're an NFL running back coming off a major knee injury, like that doesn't seem something that you can like put someone out there in live games, like at a limited workload and just expect it to work out. Hey, I'm not someone that's a doctor or a head NFL coach. And obviously the Ravens, have years and years of success behind them telling us that they know what they're doing. But to this point, certainly not helping Dobbins' counting statistics. What you said though is true. I mean, maybe we do actually see him get some rest here. And again, Justice Hill, Gus Edwards certainly don't seem like they're going to be factors this week. So if we take all of them out of the picture, we have seen Mike Davis pretty much be in the doghouse throughout the season. At that point, it would be tough to keep Kenyon Drake out of the top 24. But like, if all those guys are out, Kevin, would you go Kenyon Drake or Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
I think I would go Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but it's close. It's close. I mean, I have Drake. I think I have him in the low 30s now. If Dobbins, if I felt more comfortable about Dobbins being out, I would put him somewhere in the 20s. So I don't know. It would be a coin flip to me. I think, I don't know. You know, I'm really not a Clyde Edwards-Helaire fan. That's my problem. I just don't like sitting around hoping, you know, hoping that a guy that you don't really, you're not really confident about his workload or how good he is going to score just based upon the offense. So I don't know. I might go Drake. I'd flip a coin and figure it out, I guess.
I got CEH RB22, Jeff Wilson RB23. That's right about the spot that I'd be looking at with Drake, should those other guys be out. All right, second place, your Cincinnati Bengals, 3-3. Wanted to ask you, Kevin, how sticky is some of this deep ball stuff? Because we have seen Burrow 2020, really terrible. I mean, 33rd in PFF passing grade, throwing downfield, and he was only doing at the 19th highest rate in the league. They get Ja'Marr Chase, and oh my gosh, you had Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow back together. They're a top five group in pretty much everything. This year, though, they really haven't gotten it going. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase led the NFL last year with 8 touchdowns on passes thrown at least 20 yards downfield. The next closest wide receiver was Tyler Lockett, which is 5. This year, still doesn't even have 1. He did drop one last week. He caught 2 more later, so it wasn't that big of a deal, obviously, in the stat sheet. But is this something that we should just expect them to get fixed? Because we now have seen them be pretty mediocre, 17th in PFF passing grade, 22nd in yards per attempt. Or is this more so the normal in Cincinnati, and last year was actually them really just exceeding what we should be expecting out of them?
I think maybe what we saw out of them this last week would be more of the normal. I mean, you're not going to get 85 yards after contact of receiving work from Ja'Marr Chase on a week-in, week-out basis. So I'm not saying you're going to get that, but I think that some of the deep passes that we saw last year are going to be more difficult to get. Everyone is leaning into protecting against that defensively. It's not just a Joe Burrow issue this season, although it's affecting him more than some others because of how reliant he was on it last season. So there was further to fall for him. But I think that he started to get things going a bit here. If you look at how they played offensively in the shotgun, every single snap other than a QB sneak and a QB kneel, they're leaning into that. Only ran the ball 10 times. Stop giving it to Joe Mixon, and you know, 2 yards in a cloud of dust back to the defense is not what you want from Joe Burrow. I think this is what you do want. Hit the guys in stride, allow them run after the catch. We talk about these long passes for Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, the dude is a beast when it comes to run after the catch also. And I think that is even more of how he's going to be utilized. Because generally, as far as his depth of target in this game, it wasn't like they fully flipped the script here. I mean, 10.8 average depth of target, not that high. T. Higgins was only at 7.2. Tyler Boyd at 6.3. So Ja'Marr Chase higher at 10.8, but they weren't stretching him down the field a ton in this game. It's really just going to be utilizing more of that run after the catch.
This week, they are home against the Falcons. 6-point favorites, game total at 47.5. I am expecting Ja'Marr Chase to get that A.J. Terrell shadow, but this year, it just hasn't been that big of a deal. Ranked outside PFF's top 90 cornerbacks in coverage. Oh, it's PFF coverage grades. What the hell do you guys know? He's allowed a league-high 7 touchdowns. So as awesome as 2021 was for A.J. Terrell, 2022 has not cornerback play. You can say it's been very volatile year to year. It's probably the single hardest position to play in football at a high level consistently. So this is not a shit on A.J. Terrell hour. It is a continue to start your studs and as Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to save the shit on cornerback year of the year for JC Jackson.
Of course. Yeah. Ted. what did he finish? Dead last? Okay. Yeah, that is what he's at now.
That evaluation is hard at cornerback, people. It is hard.
Mixon still our one true king, expected RB1, and he is starting to get some of that good old-fashioned regression with 2 touchdowns in his past 3 weeks. Man, and like just looking at this offense as a whole, he only has 1 touchdown in the first 6 weeks. Like, if there is anyone out there that is treating Joe Mixon as more so of the upside RB2 he's been, and you can get him, I do think we're going to see Mixon, you know, putting up something more close to top 5, top 8 numbers he had last year the rest of the way. Yeah, so you have Mixon, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, whose routes were all the way back to normal last week. So we're back on team. Start T. Higgins every single week, even if there's a fire. Hopefully his health only improves. The only other thing I would bring up here is just that Hayden Hurst is set up pretty damn well this week against the Falcons defense, bottom 3 in receptions and receiving yards allowed to opposing tight ends. That's why helped get us on to the George Kittle big game last week to begin with. So with that said, let's talk now about another quarterback situation going on. I don't think there's too much controversy, but we don't know who's going to be under center for your third place 2-4 Steelers. Kenny Pickett's still in the concussion protocol, which I have no idea what that means, Kevin. I see these reports and they say, oh, the quarterback, he's fine. He's not going to be limited in practice. He's passed all the tests, but he's still in the concussion protocol. I have no idea what the concussion protocol is these days. Regardless, if he's out there, he should be starting. That's what Mike Tomlin told us. And with that said, man, 12th in adjusted completion rate this season. Now the yards per attempt, 35th, even behind one Mitchell Trubisky. But he's basically played two full games against the Jets, Bills, and Buccaneers. I mean, that is a pretty brutal way to start out your NFL career, especially on top of the same issue we saw, you know, impact Fields and some of these other guys throughout the last few years, where he starts off the year as the backup. So it's kind of expected that he's going to take a little time to gel with the starters. So I will say this, man, as the schedule gets better, which this week they are in Miami on Sunday Night Football, not great. Maybe, you know, they can take advantage of that banged up secondary. More on that in a little bit. Then they got the Eagles in Philly before their bye week. So after kind of these two rough patches, again, in Miami and Philly, he's coming off a concussion. I'm not expecting him to completely go off Sunday night, but do you think this passing game could enable more than one, like Deontay and George Pickens, to some actual heights down the stretch? Or unfortunately, is what we've seen so far this year probably what we're going to get the rest of it?
I mean, we're probably going to get what we've seen so far, but they have a situation now where, I mean, the Chase Claypool, like, arriving out of nowhere last week, which Trubisky has unlocked him. No, he's just, you know, he'll disappear again. So you just need, like, if Claypool pops up, then you're really in trouble as far as getting home with Pickens and Johnson, since like no one is starting Chase Claypool anymore. So he did a lot of work on the waiver wire or on people's benches this last week. That's going to be the problem. When you have a low ceiling passing game generally, and that's what it's been, then it's hard to get home. I think Pickett is going to definitely be the preferred option for these guys going forward, despite the fact that Trubisky was better this week. And as you mentioned it, we're all out of whack when it comes to the concussion protocol now, because the Miami Dolphins are not allowed to start quarterbacks out of the concussion protocol. But Mike Tomlin pretty much said if he can start, if he's out of the protocol, he'll play, which is the normal way things work. So hopefully that's the way things are going to be.
Because it was a Dolphins thing that confused me so much in the first place when Teddy Bridgewater is like, did they just straight up pick Skylar Thompson over Teddy Bridgewater? Because I don't know how you can have a quarterback only for emergency purposes coming off a concussion. This is not a
I think they like getting Thompson out there. But, you know, Tua was also out of the protocol this for last week, too. So I don't know what's going on there. They're just having to be extra cautious, at least when it came to Tua. I think between Teddy and Skyler, I think they just decided it was more of a coin flip situation. So why not go with the rookie?
Quick note that I just saw pop up on the news. Speaking of this Sunday night matchup, Jalen Waddle did not practice on Wednesday due to a shoulder injury, but Mike McDaniel is optimistic that he plays week 7. So optimistic, a little bit different than he's going to be out there and play. So, you know, definitely be aware of the situation on Sunday night. You always got to have the backups, you know, ready to go in that game or Monday night. So sorry, Jalen Waddle fantasy managers, you might have some problems there coming into Sunday, but obviously, you know, just stay tuned. You can check out the PFF fantasy football podcast every Friday afternoon, where myself and Nick Botiford go through every single fantasy relevant injury. So we did get non-steel plate Najee last week out there. Kevin caught one of the easiest swing pass touchdowns you'll ever see. But again, I'm not here to point out all the efficiency stats that say Najee's this bad running back, because guess what? Those were honestly there last year as well, other than him forcing a bunch of missed tackles. He hasn't been efficient. We can point to the passing game. We can point to the offensive line. It's a team sport. That's all fine. The problem is this year, he is 17th in expected PPR points per game at 13.5. Last year, he was second at 19.7 behind only Derrick Henry. And the big issue is in the receiving game. He's on pace to only catch 42.5 passes. Last year, he caught 74. 202 receiving yards is a 17-game pace right now. Last year is at 476. So basically, Kevin, the question is, do you see this changing? Because it looks like Jalen Warren, even though he isn't going to take over this backfield or anything like that, he's certainly playing more than any running back we saw involved behind Najee last year.
Yeah. When it looks for routes, Najee ran half of the routes, 17 of 34. Jalen Warren was in there with 12, and then they have, you know, Pickens this year. They can more credibly run some empty stuff where they don't even have a running back on the field than they have in the past. So it's not going to be 2021 Najee, where he's just never leaves the field basically and is soaking up, you know, 10 targets from check down Roethlisberger. It's just fortunately not going to happen this season.
Also in breaking news, DK Metcalf has requested a fantasy trade. Kevin, not a trade from the Seahawks, but someone complained about his fantasy points. So he said, trade me then. I think that is a great thing that future players should get behind more demanding trades, not in real life, but just in fantasy. Keep those managers on edge. You always got to worry about that team chemistry, man. We can't have too many divas out there not appreciating the cause, of course. In last place in the AFC North, we have the 2-4 Cleveland Browns. We said a lot of good things about the Cleveland Browns the first 3-4 weeks of the year, but this is not going to be one of those segments, Kevin, because Jacoby is starting to turn back into Jacoby this season. PFF passing grade, this is the nicest thing we can probably point to. He's 16th among 38 quarterbacks with at least 50 dropbacks, but go ahead, hate on PFF, take your traditional statistics. He's 31st in QB rating, he's 29th in yards per attempt, he's 28th in adjusted completion rate, back to PFF, 12th in big time throw rate, 28th in turnover worthy play rate. Last week was his first truly brutal game. Again, we have seen some good ones out of Jacoby. Now he was facing Bill Belichick and the Patriots last week. I get it. For some reason, that's the one coach that you can face in this football league. Play like shit, and then people just completely give you a pass each and every time. And yeah, I guess you guys earned the reputation for being able to get that benefit of the doubt. But man, Nick Chubb and company, they're first in EPA per run play. They're 19th per pass play. I feel like this is what we're going to see more getting forward, Kevin. Or do you see, have you seen anything from Jacoby to suggest that the 2022 version of him is going to steady the ship?
No, and I'm kind of surprised it took this long.
Me too.
To see a game like this, taking sacks. The bad decisions had come, although they had come at the end of games. We saw some back-breaking interceptions. This time it came, I think, on the first or second play of the game, and then there was another drive where he threw an interception on the first play of that drive. So this is just who he is. And against good competition, it's going to be tough for Nick Chubb to get the right game script that he needs in order to produce, especially when the defense is really the problem. The defense cannot stop anybody. That puts them all in a very, very bad situation. I thought what was interesting is Brissett had also been getting a boost when it came to EPA per play for the fact that he's a very effective runner. In fact, in third and fourth and one situations in his career, he had converted 29 of 30 of those in his career. He failed on a fourth and one in this game. So everything was going against Brissett and the Browns this week.
That's one of the best stats you always hear on those broadcasts. They're getting cocky with it, man. That was a long one that they tried to really get Jacoby to sneak there. Did not pull through. I also love the league-wide trend of now teams just, hey, when you okay, Jacoby's a big, sturdy guy. I get that. Jalen Hurts, too. I think I saw someone tweet that. It was the Michigan running back. Corum or whatever. They're like, Corum could probably leg press a school bus full of children. That's how I feel about Jalen Hurts. Like, we've seen the Oklahoma squat video. Certain quarterbacks, okay, put them there. I don't think they're at a ton of risk, but the ever popular practice now of them just taking the tight ends, shuffling them behind center and QB sneaking it, or you have the tight end. I saw the Eagles do this with Dallas Goedert, literally stand right behind the quarterback and just shove them with all their might. Now that they took away, you can just push players as long as you want these days. It used to kind of be a silly rule that they ignored in the first place. But Kevin, like, in 5 years, could quarterback sneaks just become tight end sneaks like more times than not? Because that seems to be, just from the eye test, what we're seeing more than ever this year. It's been a fun little, wrinkle dinkle in there.
Yeah. I like it. But Brissett is interesting. When they signed him, I thought, this is an interesting signing just to have a backup quarterback who can run these types of plays pretty effectively too. The problem is, if they're going to really bunch up those A gaps, then you don't have that option. And so you need to make sure that you have a situation like how they run it, where they don't just, it's not like the tight end is playing quarterback. They still have the quarterback in there. They still haven't come in there. But do you want your quarterback then doing the bush push for the tight end in that situation or not? We'll end up seeing going forward.
Final note here with the Browns and Baltimore this week. Baltimore 6.5-point favorites, game total 45.5. Last week sucked for Kareem Hunt, and he is only on pace for 48 targets this season. Just realized, as long as Nick Chubb's out there, we are going to have some duds here. Continue to treat him as a borderline RB2 more weeks than not. David Njoku, though, really going out there. He's been helping the fantasy squads. And just honestly, every single advanced metric you want to pull out, the guy is looking more and more like an elite tight end. That's all he's been this year. Third in yards per out run behind only Travis Kelce and Mark Andrews. He's third in PFF receiving grade behind those guys as well. Fourth in yards per reception. I mean, Kevin, like right now, David Njoku, he's increasingly becoming tough and tougher and tougher to rank, you know, outside the top six, top eight. I have a fantasy team with Kyle Pitts and David Njoku on it, just like I know plenty of other people do out there, because we all just collectively have to agonize on a weekly basis about which one of these guys we're picking. So I'm not saying that that's going to consistently, you know, just be the Njoku here for the next 5-6 weeks. It is still a conversation for sure. But once Deshaun Watson gets back, man, like David Njoku might be the consensus tight end three. Like, it's possible.
It's close. It's closer there. I mean, I think there's just a lack of weapons outside of Amari Cooper. In this particular game, you had a little bit, I saw some people drawing up some stuff, a little bit of the Belichickism of trying to take away the top option and take away Amari Cooper here. So that was part of it. But when it comes to Peoples-Jones, David Bell, Anthony Schwartz, not a whole lot else there. You mentioned Kareem Hunt. Jacoby Brissett is not really a running back check down sort of guy that kind of goes hand in hand with someone who holds on to the ball too long in that sort of situation. I think it's a pretty strong relationship there. Maybe Watson will be someone who will look to toss it out to the running back a little bit more often, as opposed to Njoku. But you're right, he's doing great so far this season. You're very happy if you have him with the landscape at tight end.
I want to give a quick shout out to some sponsors before we continue with some AFC South chatter. No House Advantage is changing the game by offering the most dynamic fantasy sports platform available today. Play in pick'em contests versus other people for the shot at winning 250K plus in cash. Download the app, choose a contest, select your player props, earn points for correct picks, and climb the leaderboard for your shot to win big money every day. You can also test your skills versus the house and 20 times your entry if you hit all your picks. Betting up to 5 player prop over-unders or individual player matchups across every major sports league, including NFL, NBA, MLB, PGA, MMA, and NASCAR. Sign up now with promo code FANTASYPFF at NoHouseAdvantage.com or download the app on the App Store to get a first deposit match up to $25. Make sure to check out No House Advantage today and experience daily fantasy sports redefined, because it's not just how you play, but also where you play. You won't want to miss out on this. Also, got to love our friends over at Western Southern. The PFF Fantasy Football Podcast is sponsored by Western Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western Southern helps advance your money moves, buying your first home, plan to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow. Western Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Also, finally, everyone, Underdog. Even though best ball mania has ended, Underdog Fantasy is still the easiest and most fun way to spice up your football season with their pick'em game. Just look for your favorite or least favorite player stats. Pick whether you think they'll end up with a higher or lower total than that number in this week's game. You can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Underdog keeps it super simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players for your pick'em entry. Get all your picks right, and you'll take home some cold, hard cash. It's simple to get started. Just head on over to UnderdogFantasy.com or download the app. Sign up a promo code PFF, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code PFF. Get in on the action today. Kevin, I understand you have some really important breaking news.
I wish I did. Oh. I don't know. This one's stretching it a little bit. Okay, I got something here, but I don't know if it really qualifies. It says Josh Allen's hurdle. I guess, or I don't know. Are we going back to like when he was a rookie or something?
No, he just happened last week. That was dope.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Okay, Josh Allen's hurdle inspired a street name change in Buffalo with a cutout on top of it. So there's Hurdle Drive or something in Buffalo now. So I don't know how like player to street name analytics, how those go together, but we may I'll do some research. I'll get back to you next week. We can dive into it. We'll see. This is his first week playing with street named Hurdle in Buffalo, so that's all I got.
I want to apologize to all listeners last week. You know, you guys heard it. I mean, Kevin and I came out here. We told you guys about the ping pong table. And unfortunately, you know, the story just developed so much more. Truly, that is so funny how Mike McDaniel, like, lauds the players for getting rid of the ping pong table, getting the focus. And then Tyreek has to be like, yeah, coach, actually, we had to get a better ping pong table. Like, come on. That's the exact
communication. Opposite. Where's the communication in this organization? Is everyone moving in the same direction? I don't know. Is there a mutiny perhaps going on? Players only meeting around the ping pong table, I think, is the next thing that's coming.
your AFC South leaders, fresh off their week 6 bye, your Tennessee Titans at 3-2. Big game this week against the second place Indianapolis Colts. Tennessee favored by 2.5. Game total at 43.5. We got some pretty cool behind the scenes tools at PFF, Kevin. One of my favorites is yards per route run. It's just one of those things in football. We're always dealing with small sample sizes. So what's our largest sample size for any pass catcher? It's going to be their total routes. And what's more stable than touchdowns? Yards. Thus, we have yards per route run. And this season, 53 running backs have run at least 50 routes. None, Kevin, have averaged more yards per route run than Derrick Henry. Dontre Hilliard is up there. Ryan Tannehill this year, 9.5 yards per attempt on passes behind the line of scrimmage. The next closest quarterbacks are Matthew Stafford and Jimmy G at 7.3 and 7.2. Now, passes behind the line of scrimmage, you know, the easiest job in all sports. And it makes sense that this is the more so the scheme plays more than anything. And Stafford and Jimmy G have consistently been at the top of this list ever since Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan took over those respective offenses. So is this something that we could expect to continue out of here, Kevin? Because to the Titans' credit, man, they lost AJ Brown, and no, things haven't been quite as prolific, but with Henry and Hilliard making up some of that slack in the passing game, I mean, this is a wide receiver room that as a whole combined has zero top 24 finishes from everyone involved. Do you think Henry and Hilliard can kind of keep making chicken salad out of this chicken shit in the passing game?
Yeah, I mean, someone's going to have to. I mean, as you mentioned, there's just no one to throw it to. I mean, even at tight end, when they brought in Austin Hooper, has been basically a non-entity as far as putting up points. Treylon Burks is still out, is going to continue to be out. Now, I would be slightly interested. Slightly interested in Robert Woods for the fact that, again, Burks is still out. We have Woods. When we talked about these players ramping up after a major injury like that, we got the bye week, got a little bit more time into the season. Maybe he can actually be somewhat productive in game scripts where they have to throw the ball. You're right. He's never been better than wide receiver 27 so far in any week a couple of weeks ago, but he was 27 and then 51, and they didn't have to pass it a whole lot. So I don't know. I'm just saying, desperation. If desperation is really sitting in, I'm sure you can put him on your roster, put him in there, no Burks. Maybe you'll actually get like 75 yards and a touchdown or something like that.
This week, I have Woods as my wide receiver 37, one spot behind Devin Duvernay, assuming Bateman's out, ahead of guys like Zay Jones, Tyler Boyd, Josh Reynolds. So, hey, put him in the flex. I could see it happening. He is going to be the guy if it's going to happen for that it will. Otherwise, start Derrick Henry. And, yeah, we'll see if the Titans can go ahead, stay on top of this division. Again, they are facing off against the Colts this week. And credit to Matt Ryan. This was a game where he completed exactly one pass thrown 20 yards downfield, and it was the game-winning touchdown to Alec Pierce. My God, Jacksonville, it's a crosser. How many damn times you need to see this play before you just do anything to try to stop it? They didn't. Matt Ryan, 389 yards passing and 3 touchdowns through the air. With that said, are we buying anything in this offense other than Michael Pittman being really good and hopefully Jonathan Taylor coming back?
Well, you know, there's some hope for Alec Pierce also. He's someone who started off slower than other rookies. I mean, he was a second-round rookie. He had that catch to end the game, which is not, again, with Matt Ryan, is not necessarily something you're going to be expecting to happen on a game-by-game basis. But he had a couple other catches in this game. He wasn't targeted a lot, but he still had 7 targets, so he had some missed opportunities to maybe pile up some more production. In the previous game against the Denver Broncos, he had 8 catches, 9 targets, 84 yards, leading the team there. He had 80 yards the week before that, 60 yards the week before that. So after a very slow start, he's at least putting up some production, so maybe you can get interested in him. And they can't really run the ball. Yeah. So they might have to lean further into this passing game, whether they want to or not. I just want to point out, for running backs don't matter, at least in fantasy truthers, Deion Jackson, that was not an efficient running game at 3.5 yards per carry. But then again, Jonathan Taylor, not so hot in that category either. But they were just spamming him in the passing game. 10 targets, 10 receptions, 79 yards. Running backs don't matter.
Yeah, I appreciate you actually letting one of these zero RB targets get to me in our PFF league, Kevin. You take all of them.
I got too many. I mean, I started Ramondre Stevenson and Kenneth Walker, so I'm happy.
I got the takedown. Ace PFF, you know, product. Just do it all, Mike Spitz. Thanks to those 30 points from Dion. Sorry, Mike. Yeah, sorry, everyone. That's all. We'll give you guys 20 seconds of our own fantasy teams a week. You can deal with it. And then back to business. So it's a good point, though. Like, they might have to pass the ball more. My initial thing was I don't want to buy into Pierce or Campbell, because how many times is Matt Ryan going to drop back? 58 times.
Oh, don't buy into Campbell. Never buy into Campbell. I will not allow it. Friends don't let friends buy into Campbell. I think we've seen enough from him. I know he had the 7 for 57, but anyway,
never go full Paris Campbell. But the run blocking issue, man, I did the same kind of study for the Cowboys that did the Colts, and the Cowboys offensive line hasn't been great. I think they're 28th in team run blocking grade this year, but the Colts drop off really compared to what we come to expect from this group has been significant, man. Frank Reich got there in 2018. Here are their yards before contact per carry from 2018 to 2022: 1.5, 1.4, 1.7, 1.6. This year, 0.9. Their team run blocking grade has gone from second to second to third to ninth. This year, 25th. So, yeah, Jonathan Taylor, when he comes back, man, like, look, we saw Saquon Barkley look like a complete world beater in the early parts of his career. And even 2019, though, when he came back from that ankle sprain, he wasn't the same guy. Cordarrelle Patterson last year, you know, this happens, pulling Zeke last year with the PCL. Really good running backs, not to slide Zeke in there with a bunch of these guys right now, at least at this point in time. But you guys know
what
I mean.
Well-paid running back.
There we go. That's better. Really, you know, well-paid running backs, when they get injured, yeah, they're going to be at less than 100%, especially if they are going to be coming back, you know, sooner than they should be. And it certainly doesn't seem like an insignificant injury if it's kept Taylor out of the picture for 2 weeks. So I get it, man. Like, when Taylor's healthy, we're jamming him in the starting lineups of all shapes and sizes. But, like, rest of season rankings, Kevin, like, with Taylor's workload, a lot of it was under the assumption that he was running behind this big, badass offensive line. He was going to be able to work as one of the most efficient running backs in the league, a la what Nick Chubb continues to do year after year after year. With Taylor, man, like, rest of the season, would you still draft Jonathan Taylor as a top five fantasy running back for the rest of the season?
I mean, maybe number five, but I don't think I would have him. I mean, you got Barkley. I still think McCaffrey's up there.
Eckler,
obviously.
And then it's like Taylor versus Henry versus like Fournette. Like, there's,
yeah, Henry, close. Fournette. I mean, Kamara is like starting to come back around in a way where I probably still lean Kamara before I would go Taylor, I think, even at this point. I mean, he needs the explosive runs. You mentioned the Cowboys running game. The only time we've seen him do something this year is when Tony Pollard has ripped off a big, huge run. So he needs those explosive plays. At least he is the type of player who can get those explosive plays. So he's going to need that. He's going to need touchdowns, because the ability to rush the ball 30 times for, you know, steadily 4 or 5 yards a carry is looking difficult this season.
And I think it's a good reminder of being careful what we consider like a safe fantasy player. And look, Jonathan Taylor, if you didn't think he was the number one pick, you thought he was the number two pick. So I'm not sitting here trying to victory lap that by any stretch of the imagination. Just with Taylor and these running backs, like Nick Chubb, who did it last week, man, it's really awesome until all of a sudden that league best efficiency starts to fall apart. And it doesn't even have to be their specific fault, but just, man, just the run game efficiency is so dependent on everyone else in the offense. Something to keep in mind, that as gross as someone like Christian McCaffrey's offense can be, the guy overcomes it because of that sweet, sweet pass game volume. All right, third place in this division, we got the 2-4 Jaguars. How are we feeling about Trevor Lawrence through 6 games, Kevin? I think you mentioned before in that Jets piece that we were just doing, just the fact that you're not sure that last year's quarterback class is really going to have this superstar emerge. I will say, when things have been pretty perfect for him, it's been okay. Straight drops, no screens, no pressure involved. 15th out of 37 quarterbacks in yards per attempt. He bumps up to 7th in adjusted completion rate. And he's had, you know, over these last 5 weeks, 3 top 12 finishes in just pure fantasy scoring. So he hasn't been bad per se, but I'm kind of with you here, where I'm still waiting to see, again, the best, most generational quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. And really haven't seen that, even I would say, in weeks 2 and 3 this year when he was playing some of his better ball.
Yeah. I think, okay, so you want to see some sort of jump in this second year. I know there's the whole Josh Allen exists. We get it. Okay, it happened. Josh Allen had a massive jump. But I do think you have to differentiate a little bit by saying Josh Allen was not recruited, I don't think at all, by a Division I school coming out of high school. He went to junior college. Then he went, he basically recruited himself into Wyoming. And he was a high prospect even going into his redshirt junior year. But he wasn't a refined prospect. And we've heard these things about him working on his mechanics even forward. Trevor Lawrence has been going to like every high-end QB camp, top-rated guy, probably since he was like in sixth grade as far as being a quarterback. So I have more difficulty seeing that path for this rapid improvement. It's not like he hasn't been vetted and looked over by the highest end QB coaches in the entire universe for multiple years now. So the inconsistency, I think, is troubling. We haven't seen it. We could see it in the second half of this year, but I think if we don't see it this year, then you have to resign yourself to the fact that he could be maybe a top half quarterback who plays up and down and is probably not going to be that elite guy. We have to react to what we're seeing and the evidence that we're getting.
This week, home against the Giants. Jaguars are favored by 3. So to Kevin's previous point, the market's certainly not treating the Giants as the 5-1 juggernaut that they appear to be on
paper. Disrespect. Nobody believes in us.
Hey, Game nobody believes in us.
Actually, oh. I don't know how to do it. New York, I don't do it. Hey.
I'm with you, though, man. Go bet it then, all right? Like, yeah. You feel this vehemently, like you disagree with me that strongly, get this upset about it. Yeah. Go make some money then, and then thank me for, you know, the bad information, I guess. Not that we're, you know.
Just don't tell these guys that they have nerds at these sportsbook modeling this stuff. He's, hey, you nerds, you don't know nothing about football. You see Brian Daboll, this guy's incredible.
That's not a bad impression, yeah, Kevin. You might have something there. All right, game total, Lilly, 42. So I will say, you know, again, in this passing game, we are having last week, I mean, Lawrence 20 for 22. They just really weren't asking him to do all that much out there. So I do think there's a bounce back spot coming for Christian Kirk. They didn't get him as involved as they did the first 3 weeks of the year and pay him all that money to have him take this large of a back seat. But I do understand, you know, closer start sit questions. I do have Kirk more as a low end wide receiver two, and if you have, you know, an embarrassment of riches at wide receiver, I don't think he's a must start by any stretch. Don't sleep on Zay Jones, someone that was a lot more popular earlier in the year when he was healthy and doing his thing, now is available on a decent amount of, you know, smaller league waiver wires. But the run game, Kevin, is the kind of funky thing going on, because Travis Etienne is very clearly the number one running back in Jacksonville, at least in terms of what he's able to do with the ball in his hands. I mean, yards per carry, 5.6 versus 4.2. He's more yards after contact, missed tackles, forced yards per route run. He's almost three times in what James Robinson is bringing to the table. And again, I talked about before how some of these stats can be fluky. And with Etienne, I recognize that we have these scat backs that Tony Pollard looks better than Zeke every week, and Khalil Herbert looks better than Montgomery sometimes. And maybe sometimes there is an argument for that guy being better. There's also the argument that, you know, the number two, the faster, the, you know, the slasher of the group is getting kind of more so the touches that are tougher, or I'm sorry, that are easier to kind of get these big plays. Whereas someone like James Robinson is being asked to get the hard yards. Where I struggle with that argument, trying to back up James Robinson, is how horrific Robinson has been this year at getting those hard yards. That should be what he's there to do, and he's doing it worse than any running back in the entire league. He's been stuffed for a loss or no gain on a position high 17.3% of his carries. The only running back in the NFL to not gain 2+ yards after contact on even half of his carries. The problem is, man, I don't see this really going anywhere. Doug Peterson has always used these committee backs. Jacksonville seems to have it in their head, even though this is an organization with, I mean, I don't think Trent Baalke was there when they added James Robinson in the first place, right? He's the one that used the first round pick on DTN. I don't understand their, just, it's a good story, him coming back from the Achilles. I'm sure James Robinson is a fantastic human being. I would love to see him just be awesome. I don't know, Kevin, how they can continue to look at this and make this a timeshare when clearly Etienne has been the more impactful running back. Do you see this changing, or do you unfortunately think that we're dealing with a 2-RB committee? When they can get up in games, it's going to be a Robinson week. When it's kind of neutral or down, probably more Etienne.
God, I didn't realize you were so overexposed to ETN in your fantasy leagues.
I am.
You compiled a whole dossier against poor James Robinson. I was just like, I've been talking bad about this guy for a while. And I was like, whoa, step in here. He averaged 4.5 yards per carry. And you're like, Jermichael Hasty. Why isn't he playing first in front of James Robinson? I think it's just going to be a little bit rough. They just turned off their passing game last week with the game script, the way that it was going, maybe ended up costing them in the end when they couldn't convert that fourth down. So Yeah, I think it's just going to be tough. It's going to be tough. We don't have a high end enough offense for everyone to get home on here. I still do think Etienne's going to outscore Robinson, but as long as he's in the picture, I don't think you'd be confident in anyone.
Yeah, okay. I think I've said enough about the situation. Good point. Last place.
Robinson, jeez. You're going to get a cease and desist letter from his lawyer and be like, stop compiling these stats. What are these stats that you're coming? You're just making up stuff now.
Apologies to the Robinson family if you happen to tune into this podcast. Last place, Houston Texans at 1-3-1. There are two things to talk about in Houston. We know Brandon Cooks is always going to be doing Brandon Cooks things, and he is the wide receiver 23 and expected PPR points per game this year. Just a wide receiver 43 overall, which makes him our official bounce back player of the week, brought to you by Sleeper, my favorite place to go play redraft dynasty football, whatever it might be. Again, Brandon Cook still very much the cemented number one in Houston. Maybe he's not going to be a top 10, top 15 guy due to some of the inefficiencies at hand with Davis Mills under center. But guys, this is Brandon Cooks. Each and every year, he's going to beat his ADP. Right now, he's not exactly smashing it. But again, the expected versus real points are indicating that he should be on the verge of bigger days ahead. Shout out to Nico Collins. He's been doing some good things as well, but Brandon Cooks, I do think, should be the guy more times than not. But with that out of the way, Kevin, it's the Damian Pierce show. He got a bye week to rest up after forcing an NFL, well, PFF NFL record 17 forced missed tackles on the ground. My question for you, is this more of something where we should look at it and say, holy shit, like Damian Pierce, best freaking running back in the NFL? Or is this something you think more so like big time throws? Very cool. Something we love watching. Maybe something that's a little bit more of a style stat. How do you treat kind of forcing missed tackles when looking at running backs overall?
Yeah, I think it depends on the running back, because ultimately what we're trying to do is we're trying to gain yards. That's what we're trying to do. Breaking tackles enables players to gain yards. But if you're, I remember Trent Richardson was the example of a guy that had these gaudy broken tackle stats. But the problem was, after he break one tackle, he wouldn't go anywhere. And then he'd have to, just another guy would tackle him immediately half a yard downfield. So there's a little bit of that. Damian Pierce's game, I think he's got more juice, but he's not necessarily a guy who's going to break off the longest runs, although he has already done that so far this season. So I think he looks great. The problem is more going to be, how often is he going to be in a position to score? He was, even though they stunk, you know, they were not in position very often against the Jags. He was there, which boosted his expected fantasy points numbers. That's going to be the big question for him. And let's get back to Nico Collins, because again, not a lot to talk about with this team, but coming off of a bye, someone who got hyped up by Davis Mills, no touchdowns so far this season, which I think has been hurting his production. But if you look at it, you know, he had 4 catches for 65 yards, 3 catches for 82 yards this season. He had another 4 for 58 game. If he's getting you 10-ish sort of PPR points without getting in the end zone, that's pretty good. And I think he could have a bigger season in the second half of the year. So again, we're talking about deep flex, bye week sort of guy, but could turn into more of that. Anything is possible with him going forward.
Taking on the Raiders in Las Vegas this week. Raiders 7-point favorites, game total at just 45.5. Let's move on to that AFC West here. Final four teams in the PFF Fantasy Football AFC Weekly Preview. Your first place Chiefs sitting at 4-2, coming off that close loss against the Bills, a game that, again, they had plenty of chances to, you know, get up, particularly in that first drive of the game. Honestly, the Mahomes touchdown, or he was down at the 1 yard line, I guess, to MVS, illegal man downfield. Travis Kelce had a ball in his hands, got knocked away, end up losing by 4 points. I think we were pretty clearly looking at the two top teams in the NFL there, with all due respect to the undefeated Eagles. But Kevin, we kind of mentioned at the start of the show where Juju Smith-Schuster massively outperforming his expected fantasy points. And it's just, man, if you showed everyone that Patrick Mahomes, I mean, what is he this year? He's got to be a top 5 fantasy quarterback. Like, if you just show people in the preseason what Mahomes' numbers are this year and said, hey, you're getting this out of Mahomes, Travis Kelce is going to be the tight end one. But yeah, Mahomes, QB4 overall. I would have felt a lot better about Juju, MVS, Mecole, one of these guys breaking out. But so far, none of them have been able to. You look at their overall finishes on the year. And I mean, that last game from Juju was really the first time that we got any sort of a ceiling from anybody involved. Unfortunately, man, when it comes on only 5 targets, and you've talked about it, a lot of broken tackles and things that we usually haven't seen out of Juju this year, it's just problematic to really expect too much moving forward. But this season, 6 weeks, Juju had the wide receiver 7 finish last week, and MVS was the wide receiver 20 in week 5. only top 24 finishes out of this entire wide receiver room this season. Do you see that changing at all moving forward? And if so, which one of these wide receivers would you be most comfortable throwing a dart at?
No, I mean, I just don't like it overall. I mean, we do have this. Juju had 91% routes run. So that was good, especially because we have Sky Moore like exists these last few weeks, and he's still maintaining that route share. But luckily, people cannot dunk on a podcast, because I will bring up some more numbers here for Juju Smith-Schuster. He had his worst targets per route run of the season. Well, of the last 4 weeks, he had his worst air yard number of the last 4 weeks, lowest target share, all that sort of stuff. He didn't do anything anymore this week. So I didn't get that encouragement that you may want from this sort of option. And like I mentioned, Sky Moore is now starting to play 25-30% of snaps. Mecole Hardman's maybe half of the snaps. Valdez-Scantling is also going to be up in the 80s. So it's spread out enough where it makes things difficult. One thing, Sky Moore, I got to get something off my chest here. It's not really related to fantasy as much, but 24, do we have to do that for a wide receiver? Like, I don't know about you. I'm starting to feel very curmudgeon-y old man recently, where I'm done with this new uniform number thing for these skill position players. I'm tired of confusing Joshua Palmer and Gerald Everett every other play when they're catching the ball. Could we just get the right numbers for these guys? And, you know, you could keep the teens. I like the teen numbers for the wide receivers, but could we not have this? Everyone has to be single digits. 24 is a wide receiver. That should be illegal. I'm sorry. That should completely be illegal.
I miss my wide receivers wearing 80, and you know, and even the ones that do, T. Higgins, he was supposed to switch to number 5. He said he was going to last year, but he's still rocking 85 for now. Unfortunately, you know, we do have the Cowboys lineage of 88, which is awesome. And I enjoy the CD Lamb Chipotle commercial with Pearson, Irvin, and even Dez out there doing their thing. But even then, unfortunately, in Dallas, as much as we should be able to appreciate CD, we then have Noah Brown rocking 85, and they kind of look confusing sometimes, which is honestly a testament to how good Noah Brown has looked for portions of the past two seasons. More on him in our NFC podcast. But I will say I've come around more on the Sky Moore number 24 only because of how dreadful the rest of these wide receivers have generally looked. So now I'm less like, oh, look at that number 24, and more like, oh, thank God, maybe we can actually have someone with the level of explosiveness.
Well, running backs refuse to wear numbers in the 20s anymore, so I guess it's okay. Everyone wants a single digit number.
That's going to be the future, just a bunch of guys wearing 1 through 9, and we have no idea who has the ball at any point in time. This week in San Francisco, KC, 3-point favorites, game total of 48.5. I think we've kind of talked about most of this. Again, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he has the workload of a low-end borderline RB2. That's probably what he's going to be most of the season, as awesome as that top 5 stretch was earlier in the year. So let's talk about the second place, 4-2, Los Angeles Chargers. So Justin Herbert, I didn't want to get a bunch of people angry. I mean, I mentioned this. I was a busy morning, Kevin. Didn't want to do it. If you take the player A, player B, and do Justin Herbert versus Kirk Cousins, it's way closer than I think people would be at all interested in seeing. Yards per attempt, 6.7 versus 6.6. Kirk has actually been more accurate. And Herbert, man, like, these are two of the only 6 quarterbacks in the league with a sub-7-yard average target depth. Bailey Zappe, Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford, Kirk Cousins, Daniel Jones, and Justin Herbert. And we saw this last year. It was a low average target depth, and it's also Herbert doing a really good job taking care of the ball. He's number 3 in the lowest turnover worthy play rate, which is good, but I don't know if it's that good when you're Justin freaking Herbert, Kevin. Is there something to be said here that a guy like Justin Herbert is doing his offense a disservice by not being more aggressive?
I mean, perhaps he was under a lot of pressure last week. So it's difficult. I mean, last year he was a top 5 quarterback in his efficiency, despite the fact that everyone was yelling from the rooftops and needed to throw it downfield so much. This year, 17th in expected points added per play, 12th in grading after being 4th last year. So there's been a drop off. There was the rib issue, which I think has exacerbated the tendency to go short with these passes and avoid taking hits and avoiding pressure. And, you know, receivers control ADOT a lot of the time here. So if you're saying, well, we need to get more targets to, you know, DeAndre Carter down the field, if that's your solution, then I don't know if that's good for an offense either. But a little bit, you know, he did get some pass interference calls that don't end up showing up in the actual stats when he's throwing it down the field because the guys are not really separating. So it's tough. It's tough. I just don't know if they have a guy to go down the field, because Josh Palmer, when he was in college, he looked like he could do that periodically. He looks very just jaggish in the NFL now that he's had a few opportunities here. I'm not, you know, burying him, but I may be starting to, you know, sprinkle a little sand on his feet for the eventual burying of Josh Palmer as being some guy when he has the opportunity who could step up and do something.
It's worked out because he's gotten the targets based on Keenan being out. But to your point, I mean, if you would have told people that
he's just Palmer, not special, right?
You know? Yeah. I mean, Keenan Allen's played like a half of football and Palmer's the wide receiver 42. Like, I would have definitely taken him finishing top 36 in that if I just would have had that opportunity to guess that, you know, before the season. Did have the wide receiver 22 finish last week. And yeah, four penalties on that poor cornerback on the Broncos. Unfortunately, could not, you know, just keep his hands off him. We'll see if he can keep it going. It does seem like Keenan Allen's return is imminent from that hamstring injury. So that is going to change things a little bit. This week, though, I'm just not too worried about it. They are facing the Seahawks, 31st ranked scoring defense, and this is a game total week high, 51 points. So Mike Williams, keep jamming him in starting lineups. Yeah, I know. He had a bad week last week. It's Mike Williams. He's a boom, boom, bust receiver. Like, he's going to boom more than he busts. You live with it. We don't complain. I guess we kind of do complain like this with Gabriel Davis as well, but it's how the guy plays. Deal with it. He's still going to give you plenty of wide receiver one production. Keenan Allen, whenever he's healthy, get out there. And again, in this matchup, if there is going to be a time to flex Josh Palmer, okay, but I would be hesitant on expecting him to keep up, you know, anything close to this wide receiver three production when he's not giving us those big plays out there. Only thing I would know is, you know, for you wide receiver cornerback, just really focusing on those matchups, people. Tariq, what's his freaking name? Tariq Woolley? He's got four straight picks. I should know this. Apologies.
Tariq Woolen, yeah.
All right, Tariq Woolen. He plays 91% of his snaps as the defense's right cornerback. So that is not a shadow situation. This would be, I mean, that dude's 6'4". He's got great ball skills. Like, if there is a cornerback that can give Mike Williams some problems on contested catches, it would be Tariq. So this is a rare instance where if that was the shadow matchup, I do think a downgrade for Williams would be warranted. The Seahawks have never played their cornerbacks that way. You can go back to Richard Sherman's prime. They were still hesitant to use him in shadow coverage. Don't be fading Mike Williams. Even if there's a fire, you better have freaking five top 12 wide receivers on your team if you're even thinking about putting him on the bench. Let's go ahead and talk about the Broncos. Well,
actually, one thing I want to mention quickly when it comes to the Chargers. Sorry, I didn't know if you're transitioning somewhere else, but we don't know if Josh Kelly is going to play or not. So if you're in desperation mode, maybe put Sony Michel on your roster, and, you know, he could fall into the end zone and you could have a decent week this week. That's, you know, it's something to think about at least.
God forbid something happens to Austin Eckler. I'm knocking on wood, everyone. Don't worry. He is on pace to catch 116.2 passes this season. NFL record is McCaffrey at 116 in 2019. So God forbid you take that out of it. Sony Michel would be on the top of every single waiver wire column come week 8. Third place Broncos at 2-4. Russ had the bad game, made up the hamstring injury, and now, you know, we're dealing with the after effects. I joke.
How dare you? In the eyes of Jesus, he would come on. All right, go ahead.
Did you see the reply? Russ tweets out pregame, like, glory to Jesus or something. I just saw a quote tweet. It was like, don't bring him into this. Like, he didn't ask for this. But, yes, not good. And I just look at this, man. Russ is playing so much worse than even last year, Russ, in Seattle. We did see Teddy Bridgewater in Carolina, of all places, enable three top 25 wide receivers. He goes to Denver last year, not doing much. We got Drew Lock reportedly pushing Geno Smith, the freaking one king that we know, Geno Smith, over in Seattle. Are we positive that Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, and KJ Hamler, and, you know, healthy scratch Alberto, is this really such a great situation for all these quarterbacks to be in, Kevin? Or am I just making excuses for what has been a very bad start to a Broncos tenure by Russell Wilson?
I mean, if this much is going bad, and again, just to get the level of badness here, we're talking about, this is Russell Wilson. Let me go through his PFF grading by season starting in 2015. He was sixth, this is his ranking, 10th, 6th, 1st, 6th, 16th, and now 31st this season. So when this much is going bad, it's not just the quarterback, it's not just the receivers, it's not just the play caller. This is the proverbial shit sandwich that they're all they all contributed to and are all taking a huge bite out of right now. But Russell Wilson is definitely not helping his cause. We had a little bit of a hope there. I mean, I felt a little something stirring inside in the beginning of the game when he started 10 for 10. Of course, he takes sacks when he starts for 10 for 10. But still, he starts 10 for 10. They're moving down the field. They looked in rhythm. They were snapping the ball with like 15 seconds left on the play clock as opposed to every single play looking like they're going to burn a timeout or take a false start as they were the first couple of weeks. Things were looking a little bit in rhythm, and then it just fell apart at the end. So I don't know what to say. I don't know how much of it this is the fact that he has this shoulder injury going on, and now the hamstring injury is going on. He's got a lot of stuff going on there. I don't know. Is he going to play? He's played through a lot. He doesn't miss time, really. So other than when it was necessary, and even then he came back pretty quickly from that finger injury before. Things are bad. Putting Nathaniel Hackett at the top of your him and Ron Rivera at the top of your potentially going to get fired before the season even ends list.
Name of the game is trying to score points, and the Broncos rank dead last in that goal. I mean,
can't score in the red zone too. I mean, they got the longer pass to Dulcich, but you know, still not been able to score when they get down there.
They scored more than 16 points one time, once this whole season. God, yeah. It's just absolutely brutal. We'll see if Russ is able to play through the pain. If not, man, we're getting the Brett Ripien experience, which, again, I don't know how things could get worse in Denver, but I think putting Brett Ripien under center could actually help show us exactly how. This week, facing the Jets at home, Denver, 1.5-point favorites somehow over your upstart 4-2 New York Jets. So Vegas not completely burying the Broncos just yet. Offense, though, maybe game total just at 39.5. The Broncos defense has been playing very well. That's the other side of things, though. We had the Broncos and Raiders game. They lost 32-23. If you take that game out, this defense hasn't allowed more than 20 points this year, even despite having some matchups, you know, against the Seahawks offense is better than we thought. And even that Chargers group last week holding them to 19 points. So credit to the defense. Maybe they can build on that aforementioned good start from last week. Real quickly on the backfield, Latavius Murray came in. You know, he's 32 years of age, doesn't matter. Took Melvin Gordon's job, seemingly. 49% snaps, though, 15 carries and one target. Mike Boone, 35% snaps. Melvin Gordon, 35% snaps. For now, Kevin, I have Latavius Murray this week as my RB32, because I don't believe in this sticking. I don't believe in this offense, and I certainly don't believe in old man Latavius Murray at this point. So the one consistency we've seen in this backfield has been the inconsistency. We had to sit here and talk about Javonte Williams himself not even playing 50% of the snaps. I find it hard to believe that any of these guys are really going to take over, and honestly, that the Broncos are even done adding to this room in the first place. So that's kind of my biggest thing. When I see a veteran come in like this and immediately get elevated, that tells me that, you know, what happens when Latavius cools off, maybe they bring another one in. So anything to do with Latavius Murray?
You know, I mean, let's face it. When you have Javonte Williams, right, you have a certain type of running back. You need to share the load because you're not quite, you know, you have your early second round pick. You're sharing the load with Melvin Gordon. When you get Latavius Murray, though, you just let him go. You just let that guy just ride him like a stallion, okay? Another brilliant strategery there going on from that coaching staff. Yeah, I think I have more around RB30 because it seems like Gordon is like dead, like Cam Akers dead pretty soon sort of situation there. And Boone is booning it up. He looks pretty good, but I don't think he's ever going to be a guy they're going to trust to. So you're going to see Latavius Murray run and fall forward many times this next week, and that alone could get some production.
Last place, 1-4 Raiders coming off the bye, and Derek Carr has been pretty terrible this year, and we can say it's always been Derek Carr. Derek Carr, at least in the John Gruden years, had some highs for stretches. Last year, before the Henry Ruggs debacle went down, I mean, Carr legitimately had like top five numbers in most statistics. Not fantasy points, because he didn't have the volume going for him, but just in terms of, you know, the more advanced metrics we use to measure real-life quarterback play, he was really good. Not so much this year. PFF grade, he's tied for 27th with guys like Kyler Murray and Zach Wilson. Bottom eight quarterback and turnover worthy play rate, adjusted completion rate. Like when you look at this, Kevin, again, I know you haven't been the biggest Derek Carr fan on this podcast, and maybe it's just as simple as it's Derek Carr, but like, do you think there's time now coming off the bye? They're still learning Josh McDaniel's system. I mean, there is a lot of talent in this system. This passing game should be better. Do you think it will be at any point this year?
Yeah, I think it'll be better. I just don't think it's going to be high end. And when you have Adams there, and when you have Renfrow, who can attract targets, I guess Waller, you know, he's not really, you know, you're not gonna have to worry about him necessarily soaking up targets. What's the deal with Waller? How long is he gonna be out for?
We'll find out. I don't know. We haven't gotten an update, I don't think.
We'll find out about Waller, what's going to happen there. I just think it's going to be tough when you're spreading it that thin. Also, they've been liking to run the ball maybe a little bit more than you would have seen with Gruden in the past. I do think, though, that Derek Carr, he has been playing well, but Derek Carr, maybe Aaron Rodgers, who else? Herbert probably is another guy who hasn't been that great this year. Joe Burrow for part of the season. They should just all be sending thank you notes to Russell Wilson for soaking up everyone's hate and everyone's bust talk the entire time. Those guys have been a little bit freer, I think, to escape, at least on a national level, the heat that they should be getting this season.
It really just has been a league-wide putrid effort, and we're just throwing all that hate on Russell Wilson because he keeps playing in prime time. I think that's the main issue.
Yeah, that's part of it. And he keeps – stop TikToking.
Yeah,
stop it with the TikToks, please.
Stop it.
For the love of God.
This week at home against the
Texans. Jesus.
Raiders favored by 7, game total 45.5. Look, you know, we got Devontae Adams out there. I did see an update that they're treating this, you know, assault case with the camera guy as it's under the personal conduct policy. So they're going to let it play out legally before Adams faces any suspension. I mean, look, when they're able to push back like Alvin Kamara's like legitimate assault, not to say that cameraman wasn't, you know, completely. Whatever, but like when they can push
that happens. Okay, if that happens in the tunnel, we never hear about this again. It's just who cares? No one's talking about it. No one's ever. Now he's got whiplash. That's the official report. He's got whiplash. His doctor said he needs a bacchiotomy, so he's in big trouble.
Great movie, but spare me that. Come on, man. So, look, I'm not worried about Devontae getting suspended. Open to changing opinion if we get new information, but it does seem like something that's going to
A check's going to get cut. I mean, Just get your check. Get your check and go, buddy. We don't need this. We don't need to bring the state into this.
He's getting that BetMGM money. I think Devontae is doing absolutely fine these days. So, you're firing him up. If Waller's out, that is going to be a nice boost for Hunter Renfrow, and we could see Foster Moreau come in and take on an every down role. He's been a little banged up too, though, so I would be a little worried about that. Really, inexplicably, other than Devontae Adams, Josh Adams is the most sure thing in this offense. And dude, he's just been awesome this year with the ball in his hands. PFF's highest graded pure rusher this season among 39 qualified backs, 7th in yards per carry, 3rd in yards after contact per carry, 3rd in missed tackles forced per carry. He's caught at least 5 passes in 3 straight games. His previous 45 career contests only did that 5 times. So I'm a believer in Josh Jacobs the rest of the season, Kevin. We thought this was going to be, you know, New England Southwest, 3-4 running backs involved. It's really been the Josh Jacobs show consistently throughout these first 6 weeks.
Yeah, it has. And, you know, we're well beyond the point now where you have to worry about, is this going to keep up? Is this a guy that you want to sell high on? Those sort of things. I just, you know, you're probably not going to hit a point right now where the value actually still matches up to what people's perception is of him. So you're riding them and you're extremely happy because that means you hopefully were able to draft a high-end wide receiver or someone else early who is doing well for your roster.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs, certainly the crown jewel of the fabled dead zone RB area, at least for now. All right, guys, that's going to wrap up the AFC preview edition of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm going to get a cup of coffee. And guess what? Kevin and I are going to record NFC in just about 5 minutes. But first, Kevin, people can find you on Twitter at Kevin Cole PFF, always saying some good stuff on the Unexpected Points podcast and usually pissing off at least one fan base a week, whether they like it or not. What else you got going on over at PFF.com?
Yeah, it's that same stuff this week. We got the quarterback rankings, the showdown pieces. I'm going to try to do a piece next week going over more of my adjusted, expected, whatever you want to call them, scores that people can get mad at print now, not just get mad in podcast and Twitter form. And also, if you follow me, Kevin Cole, PFF on Twitter, I normally send out a slew of different graphs and visualizations that everyone can pick out how much they either hate their team and how things are going or how much they love their team. I just like it when I send something out about pressure versus clean pocket passing. Josh Allen is like really, really good against pressure. And people are like, oh, this is all the Bills fans love that. Zach Wilson's awful against pressure, but really, really good in clean pockets. And then the Jets fans are saying, oh, so he just has to get better. See, you can find anything you want in these different charts. So a chart is worth 1,000 words and 1,000 biased words when it comes to the different fan bases and how they interpret it.
For Kevin, I'm Ian. Thanks so much for tuning in to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Until next time, take care, everybody.